starting at verse 8. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another, for he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. For this, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. Do this, knowing the time, that it is already the hour for you to awaken from your sleep. For now salvation is nearer to us than when we believed. The night is almost gone, and the day is near. Therefore, let us lay aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us behave properly as in the day, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual promiscuity and sensuality, not in strife and jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh in regard to its lusts.
We're a little light in number this morning, but good quality is what's here this morning. If you're visiting with us, we want to express our appreciation and again suggest that you linger a little afterwards so we can get to know you. We're going to look at this morning do it the old way. We call it contemporary choices. And we're running a little late, but I promise to get you out of here on time. How about that? All right. In contemporary choices, we're looking at from Hebrews 13:4, marriage is to be held in honor among all, and the marriage bed is to be undefiled. For fornicators and adulterers, God will judge. We used to kind of emphasize the adultery because so many people were involved in it. Now the emphasis has to shift to fornicators. The word itself is what we get, the Greek word for fornicators, what we get the word pornography from. So anything that's a breach of the marriage bed is considered by God something to be judged. And in the context that Dan just read, it's something to be considered very severely, because God is saying, you don't know when everything is going to be over. And now is the time to start thinking about doing the right thing by God. Although he's waited 2,000 years, Romans 2 talks about don't take the patience of God, the kindness of God, as to you can get away with things. What he's doing is the patience of God is waiting for us to repent and start doing the right thing. We're looking at in the sense of old school. Okay. More young adults are opting to cohabit rather than marry, or to delay marriage for financial reasons such as debt, according to a recent study published in Demographic. It's becoming a problem in our country. There are more and more people. In fact, the way they put it is like it's a new idea, it's a bright idea, whatever, and it's not. It's something as old as the Gnostics of the first century. In the book, The Da Vinci Code, the author kind of shifted history and saying the Gnostics came before the teachings of Christ. I don't know how you can do that, but it wasn't long after that Jesus, you know, taught these things and that the marriage was something from God and should be respected, that men started thinking about going against it. In fact, in the Da Vinci Code, the epitome of it all is, yeah, it comes up with some cheap history or false history about Jesus being married or, you know, living with Mary Magdalene and the love child that they had, as if it's the epitome of spiritual activity. And actually, it's the dregs of it, but a lot of people have, you know, bought into it. You know, I've heard young people, you know, think it's a good idea to go ahead and, you know, experiment, first of all, to see if you want to live with someone. And we're going to look at the problems of that. Oh, and these times present a good opportunity to review how rigorous long-term studies, I mean, what might have been a good idea to people in the 60s, now we've had enough time to see, okay, all these people have experimented in different ways. How's that working for you? Okay. Well, now the study's showing it doesn't work. They've measured the substantial impact of marriage on financial stability as well as relationship longevity and health outcomes. Where governments used to encourage couples to marry and have homes and families. In fact, the research by done by one English anthropologist, he said he traced the destruction of 80 civilizations by a breakdown in the home to begin with. And from these, you know, we began to understand that we needed to keep the home together. And now that people are no longer interested in that, you know, the nation is tearing itself apart. In fact, Louis L'Amour kind of made the presentation. If a person is unselfish and they marry someone they love and they have kids that they love, it all stems from that. I mean, if you really love them, then you work to make sure your community is a healthy place for them. They have good schools, protection, you know, from the police and everything. And then you go beyond that, you know, to, you know, the statewide, to the nationwide, to make sure that the country is healthy. Because, you know, it all is a buffer against your family. But if the family breaks down, people become selfish. And they don't look to anybody else's interests, they just look to their own. And they could care less about community, care less about law enforcement, care less about the morals, you know, or lack of morals that are being taught in the schools. And it does begin to break down. You know, you're not going to fight for your country if you don't really believe in anything it stands for. Just to give an example, too, one of the progressive statements that I've heard recently is, it takes a village to raise a child. The bottom line of that is what they're saying is, let the government raise your child. You're not doing a good enough job. Now, turn it over to them. I mean, this goes back to old socialism. And people may like the way things are going. In fact, someone wrote an article recently called The New American Way of Life, and it's a promotion of not getting married. Before, the government used to reward people for being married with tax breaks and everything else. Now it's kind of an encouraging not to get married, especially the way they put it. I'm not going to go through this because I might give somebody some ideas on how to rig the system. But basically, not getting married and, you know, going through all the subsidies, the government paying for $12,000 a year in college tuition, free from Pell grants, $8,800 tax benefit for being a single mother. The benefits for not being married is something like $75,000 a year for not getting married and not working. That's what the government's promoting. Okay? And it might sound great. I don't have to work. I don't have to get married. You know, Big Brother's going to take care of me. But as Margaret Thatcher once said, socialism only works until you run out of somebody else's money. And that's where we're headed. Yeah, we're, $8 trillion in debt. You know, we've had several bubbles that imploded. This one's going to implode too. Pretty soon our country is going to be without money. And then all those welfares, everything else, is going to collapse. And if you haven't been training yourself to, you know, work a job or to look after people and have people look after you in a nice family situation, you have nothing. In 1 Timothy 4, Paul warned about this. He said, the Spirit explicitly says that in later times, People will fall away from the faith, paying attention to deceitful spirits and doctrines of demons, men who forbid marriage and advocate abstaining from food which God has created to be gratefully shared in by those who believe and know the truth. Here are some hard facts you may not know about cohabitation, interspersed with what the wisdom of God has to say on the matter. Basically, people are going by their own wisdom or what their friends tell them, but they need to know what's down the line. And only God's wisdom can give that to you. He designed life. He designed the universe. He alone can tell you what's the best way to live to get the maximum benefit and protect yourself ultimately. But who's more prone to break up? Those who kind of sample it or those who trust God and commit themselves to a marriage relationship? Cohabitating couples are more prone to break up and break up for good than married couples. In the May 2003 issue of the Journal of Marriage and Family Study, Binstock and Thornton found that in the first year of living together, couples who cohabitated were 8 times more likely to end their relationship than those who were married. So the odds are against you, 8-1, that if you think just, you know, being together as a couple without entering into a marriage, you know, relationship, a bond, you're doomed to fail in most cases. In the second and third years, those rates decreased to 4 and 3 times more likely, respectively. And when it comes to getting back together after a breakup, cohabitating couples were about 1/3 less likely to get back together again. So you're going to have troubles in relationships, but you've started off with the wrong mindset. And you started off without having God in the mixture. And God's trying to tell you, and the science is trying to tell you, that you've set off on the wrong foot. In Psalms 127, and this is a classical verse that's quoted in most marriage manuals, yeah, Christian marriage. I think Polly's got it on her wall at home. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. And the second part of it, you know, just kind of an illustration. Unless the Lord guard the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. We just got through looking at the prophecies concerning Babylon. Now, there was a city so large and so well protected, nobody thought they'd be able to breach it. But God wasn't protecting it. In fact, he was standing against it. He prophesied its downfall in one day. Unless God is in part of either the building of a city and a people or a marriage, it hasn't got the right foundation in order to stand. I mean, yeah, what that is people that want to just cohabitate and kind of see if it works, they've already got this, you know, mindset that it may fail and therefore I don't want to commit myself to anything. If you've not committed yourself to anything, you've not committed yourself to all the tools and techniques and the things that are required of you to make it work. And people get, you know, a skewed idea of what marriage is anyway. I remember from, you know, the 60s and 70s, you know, my era, where one of the songs that came up, it's just knowing that we're not shackled by forgotten words and bonds and some ink stain that have dried upon some line. And that's what people look at marriage as a piece of paper. But true marriage is two people coming together in the sight of God. And God helping them. I mean, he's not just standing by looking on the sidelines. He takes an active role in a marriage. In fact, a lot of the Bible is there to give you techniques in order to retrain yourself to become a different person. So that when you go into this relationship, you've got a sense of integrity, that your word is worth something, you've sworn before God and anybody else that's a witness that you're going to stay with this person and work things out and make the most of it for the rest of your lives. And you've entered into Romans 7, not a bond with each other, but a bond, a marriage bond or law with God involved. And when you've got the right mindset and the think so's and bring the right character into it, a marriage will probably work. The odds are with it, especially with God involved. If it doesn't, it's because of weird things. You know, maybe the health of somebody, they pass away, go insane or something like that. But if you still love the person, you'll be with them to the end. That's what God requires. I was impressed by a race car driver. The fast set or whatever. And he had a beautiful, you'd think she was just arm candy. But he got in an accident. It was totally disfigured, through a fire. But she stayed with him. She had committed herself to helping him, to being with him, to being his mate. Although he wasn't, nice to look at anymore. She had some character that people didn't see. Even after marrying, women who cohabitate prior to marriage are more apt to separate or divorce than those who do not. Because there's still something that causes you to do that to begin with. You're looking for, thinking that this relationship is going to fail. Instead of looking at prior to it, what are you looking at in a spouse? Are looking for, and what are you bringing to it to make it work? One study demonstrated that for women who lived with their partners before marriage, it was 33% more likely for their marriages to result in separation and divorce. I mean, you have a weird look at marriage, evidently. When people go into, what was that line in Jurassic Park, where the guy who's the chaos theory, and he says he's always on the lookout for the next ex, Mrs. Whatchamacallit. I mean, you're already looking for a failure in any relationship you're looking at. So, of course, it's going to fail. The wisdom of the world says you should try to see if you like it and to see how to make it work. You should know how to make it work. That's the problem. The wisdom of the world also says, why buy the cow if you can get the milk for free? I mean, whatever the woman's thinking, what do you think the guy's thinking? If he's willing, he may say he loves you, but unless he's willing to commit it with a ring and a promise and a vow, does he really? You're fooling yourself. Matthew 19, Jesus said, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife and the two shall be one flesh. This last part should have been the capital. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let no man separate. That is a warning. True marriage is not a piece of paper. It's you've committed yourself in the proper mind and the heart so that God is part of this. He's the one that joined you together. If you're going against things, even if it turns out to be a common law marriage after 7 years, which are rare anyway, God is not a part of it. Nor is he part of an illegal divorce. You can get a divorce paper. But unless you're divorced in God's sight, you're not divorced. In fact, Malachi says God hates divorce. What God loves is two people that can commit themselves to one another permanently, no matter what. Less responsible men. Men who cohabitate tend to make less money than their married counterparts. Married men tend to make more money than their unmarried guy friends, according to a study based on 1990 U.S. Census. I'm kind of an example of that. Single until I was 30, I was happy living in a little apartment, on a mattress on the floor and making like $6 an hour. It was only when I got married and the children and stuff like that I got the sense of responsibility, and I can't make it with this. And I found all I had to do was ask, and the boss was, willing to increase the income. Especially if you push them a little bit. Hey, I've got a wife and kids now. Increase my pay or I'm out of here looking for something better. And the world responds. Once husbands and wives reach pre-retirement age, another study found never married cohabitors had less wealth than married couples, 78% less. So you're not going to make more money by being single. You're going to make less to begin with and at the end of it. Evidently, if a young person is not responsible enough to commit himself or herself to a lasting marriage relationship with the will to secure the future of their mate, their children, it is proof that they are not responsible in other things as well. These are big flags that go up as you sit in marriage counseling. What's the mindset of the person you're with? Yeah, when they're irresponsible, can't hold it. These are things that go up, little flags that should let you know it's time to start looking at somebody else. In Hosea 2, God gives us an insight. He says, I will betroth you, talking to Israel, to me forever. Yes, I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in loving kindness and in compassion, and I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. Then you will know the Lord. This is the way the Lord is. He's faithful. Even as messed up as Israel got, the Lord was faithful to her, willing to do anything in order to help her. And if we are children of God, we should have that same sort of faithfulness and commitment to our loved ones and to God. Less responsible women. Among young mothers, married women are more financially secure than cohabitating women. A 2004 study demonstrated that married mothers of six-year-olds report an income-to-needs ratio higher than of cohabitating mothers with children the same age. Single mothers fare the worst of the three groups, a fact that is especially troubling given the continuing decline in marriage among American adults. You're not doing yourself or your children or anybody, you know, your family, any good by thinking you can go a better way than what God has already outlined for you. 1 Timothy 5:14, therefore, I want the younger women to get married, the younger widows, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach. Less responsible lives. Cohabitating couples report more depression and more alcohol problems than married couples. Even when controlling for race, age, and gender, cohabitating individuals reported higher levels of depression than married ones. In another study, cohabitating individuals were three times more likely to report having problems with alcohol consumption than those who were married, as well as 25% more problems than single people who did not cohabitate. You can see here there's problems going on inside of the psyche. When a person is not willing to commit to a relationship and put themselves into it to steady themselves, to find out what's the best before marriage or relationship, what do I need to do in order to make it work, other things are going to fall apart. They're going to find themselves in an adult relationship and with an immature spirit. Cohabitating women indicated more alcohol problems than married women, and men who cohabitated said they had more alcohol problems than both married and single men. These are the facts. These are the studies. These are just verifying what God has been trying to tell us from the very beginning of time. He designed the law of marriage. He can tell us what best to do in order to make our lives happier and to not fall into a lot of problems that the world is falling into. Ecclesiastes 12:13, the conclusion when all has been heard is fear God and keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. Being more responsible. Conclusion. For both men and women, marriage remains the best route to achieve a healthy and stable relationship. Further, the added benefits are numerous in marriage when one considers the joy that a family brings and the strengthening of character dealing with family problems that it brings. That is, if you haven't grown up, when you commit yourself to a marriage and to work, making it work out, you will grow up fast. In fact, you almost see it. I can remember as a young person, your friends get married, they have children, and you'd be surprised how fast that girl grows up. Yeah, she's now a mother. And she really takes care of that child. She has a sense of maturity about her. And you can see it almost overnight. Same with the father. Okay, it's a time or a rite of growing up and maturing. Even more obvious when one thinks about it, the marriage relationship is just part of a healthy relationship with God. Why did we get married to begin with? What did God intend? So that a man and a woman could come together with their various ways of supplementing and complementing one another and serve God to the fullest. Very few people can do that on their own. But the marriage was intended to serve God from the very beginning. Okay, it's nice if you choose to get married, but you've forgotten what the main problem is, or the main purpose is, to serve God, to get him involved in that marriage, or have the marriage really more involved in being your service to your Lord. And when he is a part of the problem, meaning not an added piece in the work, not an added problem, he is also very much a part of the solution. We've looked at the providence of God is something that goes on from the very beginning of time to the very end of time. God working in this world, upholding all things by the word of his power. Why do you pray to him? Because he works still. He can answer prayers. He can grant wisdom. He can give strength during situations. We're not looking at some weird thing that it's just by reflex we pray because it's good for us. There's a real practical reason for all we do as Christians. Yeah, we understand the real reality of things, and not the kind of philosophy that the world comes up with in order to do what it wants to do, no matter what. In 1 Corinthians 11. In the Lord, neither is woman independent of man, nor is man independent of woman. For as the woman originates from the man, so also the man has the birth through the woman, and all things originate from God. It just puts everything together. Invitation. Mostly the people have problems, problems that affect them emotionally, mentally, why they go to medicate themselves and alcohol and drugs and everything else, is they haven't really understood the essence of life, and that's God. The song we're about to sing, Do You Know My Jesus? I'd rather have a, do you know my Lord? Do you know my God? Really, that's one of the things that we talked about in the short past. One of the things that Jesus warns us is when he comes, Paul puts in Thessalonians, when his angels in flaming fire taking vengeance on those who do not know God and do not obey the gospel. So on judgment day, there's two things that God is going to be looking at. Did you know him? And did you obey his word, his gospel? And the gospel is not just good news. That's one translation of it. But it is a rule of law. This is why in Galatians 6, it's called the law of Christ. In Romans 8, it's called the law of God. Why it is required. Peter says we are required to obey the gospel. You can only obey things that are laws, directives that God has given you. A lifestyle is something that God has given us. He's commanded of us in order to, that's our sacrifice to him. We don't sacrifice animals anymore, but as priests of God, we sacrifice ourselves. We bring ourselves into control, self-control. That's the fruit of the Spirit. And we offer that to God in purity, our behavior, our thoughts, the things that we do in this life. So if there's anything we can help you with, there's a lot of good teachers and men here and women, that if you're having any kind of problems in your relationship with God or you haven't started one yet, please let us know as we stand to sing.